Good morning. So for those of you who have done the tutorial, how is it going so far? Was that tutorial easy, hard? In between? Mixed. Some of you, I think, are pretty well set for it. Some of you are not, and that's okay. What I wanted to do today was talk about some other aspects. Unless there's any outstanding questions. Oh, yes?
Just sort of comment about the anything.
Right. Well, that's the tutorial, basically, that's why you sort of talked to the TA and then said, okay, I've done this stuff. The assignment, then you actually have to code specific things. I mean, that's the nature of exploration. You're trying to figure out what's going on. So that I'm okay if the tutorials are like that. The real question of the goals that I have set up is that if you are going to leave early or kind of show the TA that, yes, I've done all this stuff, you have a way of saying, yes, I've done that. But then otherwise, it's if you spend your time in the tutorial and basically stay till near the end and it's clear you've been working on it, you'll get full credit for the tutorials, at least for now. But if you find yourself not completing a tutorial by the end, you need to put in the time because the tutorial is almost always the prep you need in order to successfully handle the assignment. If you look at the assignment is basically modifying the application you played with in the tutorial. So you need that. But let's go and let's first go ahead and download. Let's start at the beginning with downloading the code. Because I realize there's one thing I had not really talked about, which was the whole idea of a web form. And which is kind of silly given this is a form demo. So first there was the node infrastructure. I had to show you that. But okay, that's saved. We have form demo. No, that's just stupid. I could do this with the things, but okay, so we have form demo. How do I get this running? I do. Okay, just do that. And there's something happening, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But let's check if the web server is running. Okay, go here. Oops. Localhost colon 3000. And we have the web demo running. So let's look at the source of this. Let's make this a little bigger. So this first bit here says, so this first part is a comment, but it says doctype HTML. Okay, this is an HTML document. It turns out you can have different kinds of specifiers for older standards, and they used to have a lot of complicated things like saying this is version 4.01 transitional things. Now they decided just call it HTML. Don't bother specifying it. In fact, actually this says that it's, in a sense says it's more modern than if you specify the version manually. Because nowadays, your code's supposed to query the browser and figure out what the heck you need to do. You're not supposed to do it with the doc type. So this is an HTML document. Here's the header. The header says what the title of the page is. Where does the title of the page show up? Yep, at the top. So when you see here, CompTutor Zip Form Demo, that's the title. That's where you specify the title. So title's there. We have this thing linked to a style sheet. This is the style sheet that actually makes it look a little less primitive. In the tutorial, try removing this, and you'll see that the original style is kind of scary. But that's the header, and then there's the body. The body has a headline, H1. Then it has a div. The div specifies basically a region for stuff. Doesn't really specify much in the way of formatting. Have a paragraph saying fill out your info, but then it has this whole thing. Where's the end of the form? The form goes on to here. This is a form. What is a form? Is the question.
Let's say you're signing into form for the first time, and they ask you username and password, where it saves your information to the server.
Right. Well, this is a way for you to send information back to the server. That's what HTML forms are designed for. In modern web programming, this is definitely not the only way of sending data back to the server, but this is the oldest, and this is the foundation for most of the other ways you have of sending data back to the server. Yes? Oh, a little bit, sure. Sorry. How about that? Okay, sorry about that. So this form is a way we're going to send things to the server. How are we going to do that? So this is a web page coming to the browser, and it has this, says it's a form, and of course there's a close tag at the bottom that says the end of the form, right here. And this form has two things. It has a method and an action. What do you think this method refers to? Someone else. Okay. So clearly this is saying, okay, how are you going to process the form? That's kind of what this is saying. It turns out this basically will only be generally one of two things. Post or get. Which means, are you going to send this using an HTTP get or an HTTP post? If you're going to be sending data to the server, you're probably going to want to use a post. So you have a post, you have an action, and then the action is just the URL. You're posting to a specified URL. So it's saying do a post of slash add. So our server has to be able to handle an access to the URL slash add via a post. Can we do this in our application? Yes, because the application works, first of all. But the code for doing this is just here. I'll make this bigger in a second. Hold on. Form demo, routes. Bigger. Okay. Can you all see that in the back? Okay. So this is the code for routes index.js. This is the code that specifies in form demo the actual URLs that we can handle. At least all the ones that are not in the public directory. Anything in the public directory is essentially like it's a static web server. You can put whatever files you want and they can be retrieved by the web browser. But here is where we specify the things that get handled programmatically. So we have a router get, so that means we can handle a get request for slash, we can handle a post request for slash add, and we can handle a get request for slash list. That's it. That's all we can do. So now there's this other bit of code here which we're going to go through now. So when you do a post, you're sending data back to the server. That data is being sent via a post request. How does that data show up on the wire, and how does that show up in the server? So these various things, these ID, type, name, are for this. Now the ID part, you'll notice that's specified. So how does that show up in the Jade source? That's also good to look at. Let's bring up the Jade. So here's where we specified the form in Jade. So we said an input and we said hash name, and we said type text, and we said name. So this pound sign hash means that that's the ID for this node. So when you're doing DOM manipulation, and you want to refer to this specific input, you would normally use that ID. So for the purposes of this code, we don't right now need these IDs, but later on we'll want these sort of things. Yes? So I can't hear you, sorry.
So, your city ID is wrong.
Oh, thank you. You're right, this is wrong. That just shows you, this code is not being used. We're not using so you notice here, this ID here for country, and then we have the city name here for city. This is the city field. But we have an ID here for country. If we were actually doing something with these, I would have noticed that a while ago. But this, it's not being used. This really, I'll fix it right now. But yeah, this is, and sure enough, we go over to the code here, and we'll see that we've got two nodes with ID of country. But if we do a reload, we'll see that change. But this type text in the name city, so this part I'm explaining to you says this is the identifier for this particular node. But these two things are form specific, specifically for this input field. So now we've said this is an input field for this form. You know, what's the point of having input if you can't? You gotta say, what kind of input are you gonna have? Well, we have these very specific data values. We're saying that we're saying the type of it, it's type text. And we're saying the name of it. So we're giving, what do we send to the server as the name for this data value? Yeah. This is the variable, this is the value. And we're going to send that back to the server. So when you fill in the form, so if I say anil, Ottawa, Canada, December, and we'll leave that blank. And we hit submit, it's gonna send that all to the server. Now let's bring up the network tab here. And let's, so we can watch this as it happens. So you'll see there was a post, and then there was this. So I don't know if you can see this all. I can change the size even there. Great. I love how things are nice and consistent there. Let's make this up. So what did we get here? So we did a post of this, and this says what we actually posted. These are the headers. But let's just look at the raw. Oh, that doesn't actually show me everything I want. We'll go here for params. So here it's saying that these are the headers we're saying. What are the raw headers? Raw headers. These are the raw headers. Oh, I see. It's at the bottom here. I need to make this. I'm not sure if I can actually. Can I actually do that? It's like there's more. Let's see if I can do this. No. Ah. if I could scroll down here and was on a bigger screen, let me see if I just shrink it here. Okay, that's not working either. Anyway, I'll just explain this to you, and when you go on your regular web browser and can see all the fields, you should be able to see everything. Specifically, what I wanted to show you is that these params here, these are the values from the form that I just sent. They just got sent to the server as part of the post request. These are parameters that basically form the body of the post that's being sent. So what happened? So you've done this post request. This data got sent from the browser to the server. And the server now is going to process this. How do we deal with it on the server? How do we get it? How do we get these values? So these are all going to be passed as part of the post request. So they're going to be given in some way to the post function that we've created for ourselves. So if we look over at the source, this is here, we've got this router post, and we have this thing here now, we're saying name, city, country, birthday, email, which are, we're creating an object, but we're using this rec body and these things. Yes?
Doesn't it just send the information to the next page to add?
No, this is the, this is add.
When you click submit, it goes to where action was.
Yeah, right, which is the add URL, which this is, we're in that function right now, add.
It just sends the info there, no?
Exactly. It's sending that info, but the question is, how do you get it out? So it's part of the incoming request from the browser. So how do you access those things? Well, you have these things coming into your function, this request and response objects. The request object is populated with all of the things that came as part of the request, parsed nicely into object and properties. So all we have to, so we want to access the body of the request. That's all in the body object of the request. And we want, and what's the name of the specific fields there? Name, city, country, birthday, email. So I'm just accessing those properties and I'm getting those values. Now, would I normally expect us always to have some sort of body? Yes, because it's a request coming in, it's going to have some body. But will I necessarily have all of these fields? No. You might say, wait a second, but I sent down a form here, and the form source has all of those fields. It has name, city, country, birthday, email. It's all there. So can't I always expect those to go to the server? No, I can't. And the reason why is because, let's see, what can I, I'm trying to see if it will actually let me edit. Okay, good. So you see, here is the request headers, here is the request body. And it's, and so this is the actual way it's encoded when it's sent. It's then a content type application data form URL encoded, content link 61. What if I just do this? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let's remove those 7 characters. So 7, that's 55. I think, wait, 54. Okay, so I did that, got that content length, and then let me send that. So it still worked. I should have, like, I should, I didn't do anything weird with that. But I can change, the point there is that I can change what's being sent to the server. And if you look over here at the, what I actually sent, you'll notice that I eliminated that field. I could have eliminated anything being sent. I could add anything I want. Just because it was in the web page, just because I specified the form had a certain structure, that doesn't mean that my server is going to get that data. I, if everyone's playing nicely and they're using your regular web page, then sure. But you can't make that assumption. You can't assume that. Your server has to check that. So what I'm trying to point out is that this particular bit of code right here, this is where JavaScript helps, because is that the properties of an object always exist. So I can always say, as long as this object body exists, I can access any property of it, and I'll always get a value. The value, however, I will get will be undefined if it's not specified to be anything. And so the rest of my code has to take that into account. So you had a question?
If you use the required field in your form, what would happen? tried to like eliminate a part of your form.
So there's ways to say that things can be required in the form. It is. What a required option to a form means is that you can't successfully submit it without filling out those values. But those are things just in the form. It's just a user interface convenience. It's just to prevent the user from submitting a form that hasn't been fully completed. The server can't trust that the browser did its job. Who knows what the heck is going on? What we're going to do later is start implementing input validation, which we're going to say, well, is the birthday, is that actually a valid date? Email, is it actually a valid email? When we start doing that, we're going to have to do the checks on the client and on the server, because we can't trust what's going to happen. You know, we can't trust the browser to do things perfectly. So this is the mindset you have to get in at the very beginning when you think about web programming, is that you may have code and data running inside the web browser, but it's a whole different kettle of fish what code runs there than is what runs on your server, because the code that runs on your server, you know the environment in which it runs. You control that. The environment in which the code in the browser runs, you don't know what the heck's happening. I mean, every browser basically has these sort of development tools built into them. So you can just sit there and muck with whatever you want and send all kinds of strange input back to your web, to a web application. When people talk about hacking web apps and doing all kinds of things, this is the kind of stuff they're doing. And I'm saying it's trivial. There's no real hacking involved. It's just changing what your web browser does. Not, you don't even need any specialized tools. It's right there. Did you have a question? I thought I saw a question over there. So, does this part make sense? So what's the anatomy of a form here? Let's go back to what we've got here. We've got, we'll just get rid of this here. So if we go back here and we look at this form, you see that we've got these fields. These are all input fields. And then we have this submit button. There's the button. Now it turns out you can have various kinds of various types of buttons in a form, but generally the one that you're going to be using when you have a form is, well, the most common one is the submit button. I think you can have a clear one that will, you know, clear out the values or something, but this button right here, by having type submit, means that the form will be, when you press this button, it will be submitted to the server. A little quirk of standard HTML is that forms are basically the only way to get standard buttons. There are lots of ways of getting buttons if you want to start using JavaScript and CSS styling and stuff, but if you just want a plain old HTML button, you need to have it in a form. Even if it's an empty form. So, having said that, how do I make a button that just is a button that goes to a link? I mean, normally you may have a link here. A link would just be of a type A tag, but a link, encoded that way will look like a link. It won't look like a button. You could use CSS to style it to make it look like a button. It would just be a highlighted text. It wouldn't be this nice little thing that I can press and goes down and stuff. So how do I do that? Well, I've got this button here, and this button just takes me home. It doesn't. So what that button is view page source. If you look here, this is the form. See, it's a very, very small form. All the form has is the action is go to slash, but the method is, wait, did I just go forward? Yeah, I did. That was really annoying. All right, oh, that's what. So you see, you have this get. That's when you use the method get, is if you want that button to just be a button. Because, of course, does the home page respond by a post request? No, it doesn't. It responds by a get request. Now, it's reasonable to say, is there really much difference between the post and the get operations? And in fact, the answer is no. You can pass parameters using get requests. You can submit forms technically using gets. You can load up regular pages using posts. Don't do it. It'll confuse everyone. The browser has certain assumptions about ways posts work and the ways gets work. Have you ever tried reloading a page and it says, if you reload this page, it requires resubmission of the data to the server? That's because the page is the result of a post request. So in order to get that page again, it's going to have to send a second post to the server. The browser knows that posts shouldn't be just sent again willy-nilly because, you know, let's say you're buying an airplane ticket. You do a post twice. You've now bought two airplane tickets. Well, not in modern web app, but you've done the purchase action twice. And that's not what you want to do. So the browser assumes that when you send a post, it's doing an action to the server and it should not, the result should not be retained and you shouldn't be doing it again. If you're doing a get request, it assumes that you're just retrieving information. It doesn't modify the state of the server. So you can do a page reload and it's perfectly safe. Reloads are permissible for gets. They are not permissible for posts. Automatically, that is. So this actually is very important when you think about mobile development. I don't know if you've noticed that your web browser, and if you switch away from your browser on a mobile device typically and then come back to it, you'll notice that, wait, the page is reloading. And that's because a lot of times when you switch out of your browser, do something else on your phone, like say play a game, and then come back to your browser, there wasn't enough memory to hold both the browser and the game in RAM at the same time. So the browser got kicked out. And so then the browser got loaded back in when you switch to it, and then it could have retained a cache of everything, but caches are kind of expensive on mobile devices for various reasons. So generally the easiest way is just to reload the data from the server. So it does the get again. Your browser does it automatically. And you just say, oh, I have to wait a second for my page to show up. If you had done it via post, it wouldn't have resent the posts. It would have required you to explicitly do that. So the difference between get and post is fundamentally about convention and about the expectations that people have on that browsers and web servers have about the semantics of them. But on the wire, they're not very different. And you can basically do almost anything with one as you can with the other. Okay. So we've gone through so this is the basics of forms. This is here. Okay. Now we get to talk about state. What is this state thing? What is this in this code? First, that's a good question. What is the scope of this variable? First off, you know it's not global because it has a var in it. So it's not global. It's local to something. What's it local to? It's local to the file. So this state can only be accessed from within this file. But otherwise, it is persistent. It's kind of like a static declaration in C or something. So this state is local to this. What type is it? This is an empty array. We've initialized this to empty array. How long is this array? I don't know. This is JavaScript. dynamic lengths. This is a zero length array. We can add things to it. We don't have to pre-allocate how big it's going to be. But we have this array. What's the purpose of this array? Is to store all the people who have been entered on the form. So what do we do here? When we get the results from the form, we get an object. We create an object using those fields. We take the rec, body, city, name, country, birthday, email, and we put that all as the properties of this object, OBJ, that we just defined here. Brand new object. And then we do this. State push. Turns out you can do pushes and pops off of arrays in JavaScript. They can be treated like stacks. So initially, it was an array of zero length. I now do a push here. Now it's an array that has exactly one element in it. That one element is an object. Every time the form is submitted, I will push another object onto it. How many could I put on state? As many as I could, as I want, basically. This array then, so there's one piece of the puzzle that we have not discussed up to this point, which is, do you think this is really how you store data in a web application? No. This is not. And the reason this is not the way you store data in a web application is for a couple of reasons. One reason is you restart the web application and you've lost all your data. You don't want to keep everything in RAM. You know, you need to save it to disk in some way. It's got to be in a persistent store if the data is actually important. So one way to do this is I could write it to a file. Open a file, write to it, save it. I can do that from Node. But that's not normally the way you construct a web app. The normal way you deal with persistent state in a web app is you write this to a database. So for the so there's lots of databases. We're going to talk a little bit about databases later on in the term. But consider the form of the database that will be the simplest to use in this application. What functionality would I want it to do? I'd want it to store JavaScript objects. Because look, this is darn easy. If I could just have something that's kind of like state, where I could dump objects into it and then maybe do some queries to find the objects that I actually wanted later, that would be handy. That's MongoDB. That's all MongoDB is. It says take JavaScript objects, to a first approximation, it's not exactly that, but basically take JavaScript objects, put it into a persistent store. Then let me query to get back these objects. So databases are often thought of as being very good for consistency. Concurrency. How would concurrency come into play with just the app we've created? Let's say we, instead of storing state in this array, this was somehow pointing to some sort of database. What could I do now magically that I couldn't do before? If I have the back end in the database. Someone else could access the state variable. So now it's available outside the process. That's true. But it's even better than that. Exactly. I can run multiple instances of this exact same application to scale up. All I have to do, so doing the Node app itself, doing this sort of, there may be some weight associated with this. You can now run, say, 10 instances of them. And now you've scaled up in 10 times, and just as long as, now the question is, can the database handle the load from 10 10 of these servers. It depends on how you've architected your system. But by adding in caching layers and other things, this gives you a way of a very easy architecture for scaling up a web application. This is one of the beautiful things about the web, is that the nature of the protocol and everything give you lots of ways of making applications scalable. I mean, this is how you have companies like Google running thousands and thousands of computers. I mean, they have, what, 2 million computers? I mean, I'm not sure exactly which fraction of them are actually on their front-end facing servers, but it's many thousands. They can scale up really easily because they can separate out the persistent state, the database, from the part that's actually talking to the web browsers. And they can stick in layers of caching between them. So when I say caching, what am I meaning? All I'm saying is, let's say I've done a query for the database and I've gotten some information. Let's say I've got a pre-generated page. Why don't I just serve that same page instead of generating it every time? That's a cache. Just remember that as a file and just send the file instead of running the program to generate the file. So when you look at a web app and you're saying, why do I have a database? It's because you've got some sort of state for the web app and the database is holding that state. Cool. Yes?
So the response, does it only render the response?
Sorry, is the response only to, oh, it's only for the render? Okay, so these objects, so we have this, we're just saying router.post, and then we're giving it a string, and then we're giving a function. When is that function called? Is this router.post, this line is called when this file is loaded. And this file is loaded when it's required when the web application starts. What's the first thing that happens? bin/www gets loaded. That one loads app.js. App.js then loads this file. It goes through and runs all of these statements. So this router.get gets run when the file is loaded. Router.post gets run. Router.get. These are function calls. And these function calls are run at that time. But this function that gets called, it's being given two arguments. One is a string. The second is a function. The string is used for determining when incoming requests come in. What is this function used? It's used to handle those requests. So what is there somewhere in the background? What has to be there? We don't see the code for this directly, but we know it has to exist. There has to be a loop. There's some sort of loop, or actually more of a wait on a socket that's sitting there and waiting for an incoming request. It's waiting for an incoming HTTP traffic. And when it gets that, it's going to parse it. It's going to extract the URL, and then it's going to check to see, do I know how to handle this? And depending on whether it knows how to handle it or it doesn't know how to handle this, it'll call either one of these functions, or it'll call the 404 handler. It will call some function in response to the request. So do you know when these functions are going to be called? No. You don't know the precise time because it all depends on when a request comes in. Do you know the exact ordering in which these functions are going to be called? Do we know that this post is going to be called after the get? No. We don't strictly know that. Maybe some joker is just going to do the post by them, on its own without doing the get. They're just going to go directly to our server and send that. They could do that. Or maybe this will go straight and do the list. We don't control the order in which these functions are called. All we control is the handlers that happen in response to these events. This is fundamentally an event-based architecture. The events are coming from these remote web servers, web browsers. So I don't know when this function is going to be called, but I know when this function called, there was an incoming request for a post to /add. And then I say, well, when you get a post to /add, do this.
So when we have a drop page that is already cached, so if
the web page is already cached,
yeah.
It's still cached, but it still sends a request to the browser, right, to the server. It still has to do a GET request. It's just that what the browser will do is saying, I have a cached version of this page. Can I keep using that version? Or, well, sorry, not necessarily. Depending on the cache control stuff, it might actually say, I already know this page, and it'll just say, I'll just show it. But normally, you'll still send a request one way or the other, and you'll get some response code back. So you don't know when. You don't know when exactly these will happen. You can't determine the ordering. You just know that this code is going to be run. So there's this other code that's out there that's going to call you. And when it calls you, you're going to do this, and it has certain expectations of you. And the expectations of your code are embodied in these arguments. It's saying, I've got a request for you to handle, and I need you to help populate the response. So the request object is here, and we can do stuff with the request object, like extract the body. And then we need to render the page that we're going to send back or figure out what file or whatever data. So we have the response here. And one of the methods of the response is a render, which is saying, okay, we're going to render something. We're rendering it using this Jade template add. And then we're passing it these parameters, which is this here. And you notice here we have two parameters. We have the title, the person just added, that's used to the title and the header of the page, and then we have this item, which we're using as this object. So that means in the scope of the Jade template, item will be defined, and it will have the value of this object, so we can now access name, city, country, birthday, email as properties of the item object in Jade. Yes?
Res
render describe? So that's a good question. Who defines res render? So first step, is this a built-in part of Node? No. It's not built into Node. In fact, what it is it's part of the Express framework. The Express framework is built on a whole lot of other middleware. There's this Connect middleware that's built on top of it and stuff. And these are all pieces of software that are used for building web servers. These are conventions. The res and request and response are conventions imposed by the framework that we're using. Could we do it a different way? Oh, definitely. And in fact, what we're going to do, and I think I was trying to decide when to introduce this, and I think it makes sense to do next week, is we'll look at a bare-bones web server that just uses, that doesn't use the Connect, doesn't use Express or anything, and just uses the low-level Node interfaces. And you'll see, you can make a web server out of it, but it's kind of painful. But you'll see the whole process of handling a request and stuff, so... Yes?
Say if
so that's a good question. Do you have to render a page every time you get a response? No. A response has to be some set of data. It doesn't actually have to be HTML. And in fact, one of the common ways of doing things with an AJAX application is, with, i.e. modern web apps, is your res will send back a JavaScript object in JavaScript object notation, JSON. It'll just send a JSON file. And hopefully you have some JavaScript on your, you know, running on the browser in order to parse it. Otherwise, the output's going to be kind of unfriendly. But, yeah, it can return any data. It can even return an image or something. It's arbitrary. It's just binary. You have to specify the type. You might say, well, I didn't specify the type here. I didn't specify all these things about exactly what it is. Well, it turns out that's what the framework does for you. It knows that when you call this res render and you do this add, it knows it's going to be generating HTML, you know, this template. It does all this work for you. So you don't have to think about all these little details. There's a lot of details that go into describing exactly what a web page looks like. You don't have to worry about that. And that's the way it should be. Because if it can be automatically taken care of, why should you worry about it? Programming is not about doing all the little things. It's about telling the computer what to do. And that doesn't mean you specify it on a bit-for-bit level. So we're sitting at 10:50 here, 10:52. So we'll pause for 5 minutes, and then we'll start up again.